Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. John Steele here as usual. You're about to listen to part 3 of our big J2 season preview for 2022. So in a moment you're going to hear James Taylor and myself run through the 7 teams that we haven't covered already in part 1 and part 2, which are available to listen to now if you haven't already. So in part 1 I picked James's brains on Niigata, Yamagata, Jeff United and FC Ryukyu. After a short comfort break, James and I regrouped and we looked at 3 mid-table teams to round off the preview. So in part 2 we looked at Mito Hollyhock, Fagiano Okayama and Tokyo Verdy. Just one quick programming note, the signing at Tokyo Verdy of the Indonesian left-back Pratama Arhan, that was something that was announced after we'd finished recording and the pod was in the can. So we didn't mention him or discuss that transfer on the pod because we didn't know it was happening. Which is a pretty watertight reason, if you ask me. But hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about Arhan and any other things that have happened since we finished recording very, very soon. But that's all for me from now. Hope you enjoy the episode. Here comes me and James. We're talking about Niigata and Yamagata, first of all. Enjoy the show. Talk to you soon. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again, and I'm joined once more by James Taylor for some more J2 season preview action. James, how's it going?
Yeah, not bad, thanks, John. How are you?
Yeah, all good, all good. Thanks, James. We were discussing snowfall in our respective parts of Japan, weren't we, in the green room before we started recording? But it's not really happening in Tokyo today, even though the forecast said it would. So I think you're definitely the snow queen or the winner there up in Kanazawa. So without further ado, James, we should talk J2 season previews. We've made it to part 3, so we have 7 teams left to talk about from the second tier that we haven't discussed together, or that I haven't discussed with Sean Carroll in part 1. Let's start by talking about Albirex Niigata this time, James. Obviously, if we think back to the 2021 campaign, the first half of the season was pretty scintillating stuff from them, and they sort of fell away. Sort of lost their way a little bit in the second half of the season, eventually finishing 6th in the table. They've changed managers because Alberto Puig Ortaneda, he's gone to FC Tokyo in J1. Rikizo Matsuhashi is the new man in the hot seat at the Big Swan. And quite a few players come in and out as well, notably Thomas Deng, the Australian right-back. He's coming in from Urawa Reds. Ipe Shinozuka up front on loan from Kashiwa Reysol. Eitaro Matsuda, the exciting wing player, he's coming on loan from Yokohama F. Marinos. I have to be honest though, James, just before I bring you in, I'm not overly... I don't know how I feel about Niigata going into 2022. I think maybe an outside bet for the playoffs, in my opinion, just a feeling that I have. I don't know if I'm being a bit too harsh. What do you think of their transfer business, their new manager, and their prospects?
Yeah, it's interesting because they don't have that many outs. I mean, they've got rid of, not say got rid of, but Frank Romero has left, and the brilliantly named Gonzalo Gonzalez has left. Aside from that, not many players have gone. They haven't really brought in that many. The ones you mentioned are the ones that stand out, and they seem like they're quite good signings. I think the main thing for Niigata is that they kept their really impressive attackers from last year. So Kaito Taniguchi, Shion Honma, perhaps surprisingly stayed, Yoshiaki Takagi. And so I guess for those of us who are not Niigata supporters, we will at least be looking to see our Taniguchi continue his improvement and Honma continue his improvement. Takagi was, I guess it was kind of a surprise he had such a fantastic season last year. Maybe he won't be able to reach the same heights this year, I don't know. I think also good they've still got Shunsuke Mito, who perhaps it'll be his time to shine. But not sure about the manager because I don't know anything about him. He was the assistant, he's been promoted. And I think this is his first job as the manager of a first team rather than a youth team or an academy team. So we don't know if he's going to continue with the same tactics and the same style. And if he is, with mostly the same squad, I guess we can assume that they're probably going to have some of the same problems that they did last year, which was that after a while, if they couldn't always break down their opponents. If opponents would defend solidly against them, they couldn't find a way through and they'd just pass it around. And if that plan A didn't work, plan B was to pass it around some more. So I think the main thing for Niigata will be what Matsuhashi does tactically with them. And it's going to be intriguing to see if they can improve on mainly the second half of last year.
Yeah, I think perhaps I made it a bit too obvious in my opening comments, but yeah, I'm a bit sceptical about Rikizo Matsuhashi as manager as well. I know he's coming in as the successor to Alberto Puig. You know, he was in the backroom staff in 2021. But yeah, that kind of leaves that question mark of, well, are you going to ask the players to continue to produce a similar style? Or are you going to try and change things dramatically? Or is it, you know, as is most likely, probably somewhere in the middle? And that immediately sort of suggests there might be a little bit of a tension between, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, or what's the opposite of throwing it? Keeping the baby in the bathwater, which also sounds bad. But
that's the well-known phrase.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I'm just not sure. Just as a wider point, it sounds like I'm really going after Matsuhashi here. I don't mean to, but in general, how often is it wildly successful when the number two takes over? When a manager's left, I'm not sure there are that many examples we can point to where that's been a sort of fantastic, led to fantastic results early on. But we'll see. There's certainly a talented squad there, as you mentioned. I think keeping hold of Shion Honma, Yoshiaki Takagi, and Kaito Taniguchi as well, you know, up front is good. I think in a way, Niigata are almost benefiting from having a sort of disappointing or flat second half of the season, because if they'd carried on, you know, if the second half of the season had been the same as the first, then those players probably would have attracted a lot more interest and maybe been on their way, wouldn't they? So, yeah, perhaps that's a kind of silver lining as well. Ryosuke Kojima, I didn't mention in the intro, but he's joined from Oita in a permanent deal as a goalkeeper. I think that's an interesting one, because goalkeeper, they had a couple of different guys in between the six. I thought Koto Abe, I think, was a first choice for a long time, and then they had a couple of other guys as well. So I'm interested to see what happens in the goalkeeper position there. But yeah, I think we have to say, because it's a new manager, Niigata are sort of in slightly unknown quantity territory, aren't they, going into 2022. So I think I'll be watching especially the first month or so, their results and performances with great interest. One team who are a known quantity, I think, at this point, James, is the team that finished seventh last year. Now, they had the same points as Niigata in their 2021 table, didn't they? It's Montedio Yamagata, and we know all about their exciting, explosive, really, attacking football that they've been producing under Peter Klimovsky, and he's back as the manager for 2022. When I was texting you in the week, James, I said they've done a Kanazawa, and what I mean by that is they've had so many transfers, especially people leaving the club, that it's taken up a whole page of A4 in my notes, which is bad for the planet, but hopefully good for Yamagata in 2022. I think there's too many players for me to start listing them off willy-nilly here, James. So what do you think of the business that Yamagata have done, and do you see them as having a real chance of automatic promotion or the playoffs this year?
Well, I think the fact that they've got so many players leaving and then so many coming in shows that Klimovsky's getting stuck into building his squad, because of course he took over partway through last year, and although he had the summer transfer window, you can't really do much in the summer window, so this is his first real chance to make his own team. And they've got some interesting movements, players leaving, like Martinez, he wasn't there for very long, but he's gone. Vinicius Araujo has left and I believe hasn't found a new club yet, which is quite surprising, really. Others coming in, the likes of Masaki Goto from Kanazawa. He was excellent last year. I was really upset that he's gone. But, it's good for him that he's earned a move to a to a team higher up the league, especially as that was his first real full season of playing, even though it's like his fourth year of his career. Who else? They've brought in Yoshiki Fujimoto from Ehime, who was possibly Ehime's only bright spot last year. He did really well for them in a terrible season. And Kunimoto Suzuki from Yamaga, Matsumoto Yamaga, yeah, maybe okay. The biggest thing for Yamagata is keeping Kota Yamada. They had him on loan last year, I think, from Yokohama F. Marinos. Has been turned into a permanent deal. He is excellent. So I think if they are going to push for promotion, which they really have to, then I expect them to, then Kota Yamada is going to be, I think, the main man to push them up the table. And I think if they can iron out those kind of inconsistencies they had in the second half of the season and produce more like they did just after Klimovsky took over, I'm not expecting them to go on 11-game winning runs or whatever, but those kind of performances, if they can maintain that level, then, yeah, they've absolutely got a good chance of automatic promotion. But at the very least, I'd be expecting them to finish in the playoff spots. It's quite an old prediction for early in this year.
Yeah, no, but I think based on what they did last year, especially in the second half of the season with Klimovsky in charge and the transfer business, I don't think that's an unreasonable or outlandish prediction, James. I think it is instructive to look at the, you know, in terms of players coming in, which positions have been strengthened. I mean, I think about sort of 15 players have come in, but only two defenders, right? It's very much midfield. It's a bit like when you said, if I sent my 8-year-old son Kai to do the weekly shop, you know, we'd come back with a lot of sweets and you know, not much fruit or healthy stuff. And I think maybe you can see what kind of players Klimovsky likes to buy. Do you know what I mean? Because you've got like attacking midfielders, far too many to accommodate in one starting 11. I mean, Shuto Kawai is joined from Matsumoto as well, hasn't he? Along with Kunitomo Suzuki, as you mentioned. Yudai Konishi, exciting player from Tokushima as well. I think where I pinpoint, it might not be a weakness, but something to keep an eye on is whoever is kind of in the kind of midfield anchor role, defensive midfield position, is going to be very busy and have a very important job in this team. Now, it could be Ibuki Yoshida, who is, I think, probably first choice in that kind of holding position, or was last year. Takayuki Arakaki, who's come in from Giravance Kita Kyushu in midfield, I think he's also capable of playing in that kind of holding role. So perhaps they'll be used together, which is a possibility. And I know perhaps it's the number of defenders coming in slightly skewed by the fact that they did have a lot of injuries at centre-back last season. And they probably have players coming back to full fitness that they couldn't call upon for long spells last year. So it might not be as... The team might not be as top-heavy as the transfer business suggests. But I do think... it's definitely a team where the front six is going to be pretty terrifying, whoever they pick. But if you can get past that front six with the ball, no easy task, no mean feat. But I just wonder about the holding midfield and the centre back positions. That might be where they'll have trouble. Yamagata, I think, potentially. So we'll see how things pan out. I'll mention one other player before we move on. James, that's a Hikaru Nakahara, who was just superb last year for Yamagata. You know, coming down the right side, he was too good to be kept on, and he's gone to Seretse Osaka for 2022. So I'm sure he'll be missed. But I'm really looking forward. To be honest, I was looking at fixtures the other day. And I was just looking at the date when Yokohama FC are hosting Yamagata. Obviously, I'm based in Yokohama, so that immediately leapt out to me as a game I'd really, really want to go and see. Because Yamagata are just a very exciting and entertaining team to watch. Even after the ball, you know, it gets behind that front six. I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But totally agree. I think playoffs, you know, finishing seventh last year and playing such sparkling football, no reason why they shouldn't be targeting the playoffs again. Yes, they've lost a couple of key players, but I think the ins that they have pretty much negate those as best they can. So we'll wait and see. I've also got and this is unusual, so perhaps I'm wrong, but I'm starting to feel positive about Jeff United as well, James, if I move us on. So they ended up finishing eighth last year. And again, quite a lot of transfer business has been done. But if I do say so myself, I don't think they have lost any key players. And they brought in some interesting additions as well. Daniel Alves has joined, who I think is a defender, but not that one. Although if you've been trying to get information about this player on Google, it's like impossible because there's another right back, I think, with a similar name, who plays for Barcelona, yeah, and Brazil, fairly famous, seems to be have a higher profile than Jeff for some reason. But yeah, also Koya Kazama, a player we know well, obviously from Gifu and Ryukyu, is there. And Saldana, not Soldado, but Saldana. His loan's been extended up front. Toshiyuki Takagi, brother of Yoshiaki, of course. He's come in from Seretse Osaka up front. James, is my optimism misplaced with Jeff? What do you think?
It's risky, isn't it? Because if you get optimistic about Jeff, you know that they're just going to let you down. But I think... Well, this is Yoon Jong-hwan's third year in charge now, isn't it? And he has seen a gradual improvement for the first 2 years. And the second half, we talked before, the second half of last season, they were really consistent. And that's why they were able to finish as high as eighth, which I think you and Stu talked about on the review season review pod, is their highest finish for quite a long time. And I think... their most important business, like with Niigata, was that they've kept their key players from last year. So Shota Arai in goal, Daisuke Suzuki in defence, and Tomoya Miki, who scored quite a few last year. They were integral to their improvement during the second half of last season. I think keeping Saldana on is good as well, and hopefully we'll get a bit more from him and from Sakuragawa as well. And we've talked before about the kind of general positivity around the club, it seems, at the moment. And I think they need to build on that on the pitch. And then, yeah, there's no reason why they... Well, there is a reason why they can't push for playoffs, and that reason is it's Jeff. The reason is it's Jeff. So, yeah, it's going to be... It's always an interesting year with Jeff. So this is going to be another one.
Well, I think with Yoon in charge, I mean, they've definitely had incremental improvement. I think they're down to just one or two silly home defeats against, you know, relegation candidates a year now, which is going to stand them in good stead. I think the points that you made again, we mentioned this when we talked about certain other teams as well, is it's more like the players that they managed to keep are probably the best new signings. You know, Tomoya Miki, really good example. Solomon Sakuragawa up front. And of course, for Jeff, what they've lacked for a long time is a solid defence. And they seem to have that now with Shota Arai and Daisuke Suzuki, but also a Chan Ming-yu, the Korean defender as well, who I was very sceptical on in the past, but has become a key player. In terms of players that they've had going out, I think the only one they might miss is Itsuki Oda, the right back, who his loan from Kashima Antlers has finished and he's gone back. But the rest of the players that have left, they were either bit part players, you know, squad players, or they were kind of coming to the end of their shelf life at the club. I think Takayuki Funayama going to Sagamihara is a good signing for them, but that's J3 business. So perhaps talk about that with Mike another time. I mentioned the goalkeeper that they released, Peter Kwame Aizawa. I know he had a pretty horrendous sounding spinal injury at the J League tryouts, didn't he? At the end of the season, but he's made a full recovery now, I think, and is back and is well again. So that's I hope that helps him in his quest to find a new club if he hasn't already. And the only other curiosity, and this is something that literally popped on my Twitter feed, I think today, James, is they Jeff promoted a young forward, Raito Saito, to the first team from their under 18 squad for this year. Now, he was immediately sent out on loan to FC Teamo Hirakata, which I think is that a JFL team, or it's a non-league team for sure. Yeah, but apparently within a few days of that move being agreed, it's been cancelled and he's gone back to Jeff now. So I don't know the ins and outs on that, whether he turned up with an injury or something is off there that I don't know the details of, but perhaps more information will come out in time. But okay, James, I think we've probably we've bigged up Jeff enough there. Any more than that, and it could come back to leave us with egg on our faces, couldn't it? So yeah, we'll move on. We'll talk about one more team in part one before we take a little refreshment break, and let's talk about FC Ryukyu. Their sort of ins and outs are pretty well balanced, I think, in terms of numbers anyway, if perhaps not in terms of quality. They've retained the manager who took over midway through last season. That's Tetsuhiro Kina. I think he was initially appointed on a sort of caretaker basis, but results and performances were good. So he's got the job full-time for 2022. I actually talked about Ryukyu a week or so ago, or it's probably longer, with Stu when we did our sort of season review of 2021, and we both were kind of the mind that there might be a regression for Ryukyu this season, and finishing ninth again might be a tall order. But are we too pessimistic there with Ryukyu? What do you think of their transfer business and their chances?
I think you're probably going to be right, because looking at the players who've gone, the Kazamas have both gone from midfield, and Shinsuke Motegi's gone to Ehime, Kazaki Nakagawa's gone to Kyoto, or back to Kyoto. The biggest one's probably Tetsuya Chinen going to Urawa, which is a great move for him. But he was the most impressive of a occasionally shaky defence. And what's interesting, though, is of the players they've brought in quite a few forwards. The most notable one for me would be Yuki Kusano from Yokohama FC, who he was quite good at. Was it Yamaguchi last year? He was on loan there, I think. Yeah. Apart from that, they've recently signed kind of partnership deals with teams in Southeast Asia. So they brought in a couple of midfielders from Saigon FC, and they've extended the loan of Sitichok Paso from Chonburi FC in Thailand. But I don't know. These guys might turn out to be brilliant, but there's no... I mean, I don't really recognise a lot of the names that they've brought in, which doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to be good, because I've never claimed to be an expert. And you might be regretting inviting me on about now. And so I think the quality of the players that have gone is quite high, and it will be difficult for the players coming in to match that. And also, we don't really know much about Tetsuhiro Kina because he only had the last few games of the season, didn't he? And although performances were quite good, it was only a few games, and he was the assistant before, so he's come through the same system. So it's kind of like the situation at Niigata. They promoted the assistant. We don't know how it's going to go. And that Nagasaki had last year, where they promoted their assistant, didn't they? And things went terribly at the start of the year. I'm not saying it's going to go terribly for Ryukyu, but I really don't know. But I think that you and Stu are right when you say that they are probably going to regress slightly from last year.
Yeah, I wonder if, looking at the ins and outs here, it's hard not to come to the conclusion that financial pressure has played a part in a lot of these ins and outs. And yes, I think the point you made about quality going out of the exit door and perhaps not being replaced with similar qualities, very true. I mean, both of the Kazamas have gone, haven't they? I mean, Koki Kozuma, for example, I mean, going to Gunma, I mean, I'm not sure... shouldn't really be seen as a step up, should it? You know, going to a team that finished 18th or 17th, you know, from a team that finished 9th. But perhaps, you know, the finances mean perhaps there's not that much difference in that financially for him as a player. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, in terms of players that have come in, they do have lots of new signings, but in terms of like X factor or excitement, I mean, I might be, I hope Jeff for Ozzy, perhaps I don't want to depress him before the season's gone away, but there's not very many exciting signings here, are there? I mean, the players that have come from Saigon, yes, they could come off, but I mean, Sitichok Paso, he's been there for at least a year. And apart from one wayward shot that made it into the zone highlights package, I haven't seen anything from him. Vinicius, not Araujo, but Vinicius Dos Santos, his loan from a Brazilian side has been extended. But again, I don't know if I could pick him out of a police lineup if necessary. He's not really imposed himself on the squad. Ryunosuke Noda, we didn't mention. He's come in from Kyoto. I think there is a good player in there, but I'm not sure he's going to be the 10-15 goal man that they're probably looking for. So, yeah, I think for me the jury's out. I think they'll be okay, and I'm not anticipating such a dramatic drop that they end up in relegation trouble. But it's not the most impressive squad you've ever seen on paper, is it? And you can imagine many more games for number 9 Lee Yong-jik at centre back coming up this year, and that's a dice roll for sure. So we'll see how it goes, but yeah, I don't know. I noticed that perhaps on that theme of keeping players, it seems like perhaps they pulled out all the stops to make sure they kept hold of their exciting goalkeepers, you know, Junto Taguchi and Inose is the other one, isn't it? The other keeper. I think Taguchi's one of the captains or vice-captain for 2022. So I think keeping those goalkeepers is perhaps a very prescient bit of business, because you can imagine they'll be key and very busy in 2022. But yeah, I don't anticipate disaster for Ryukyu, but certainly I'm definitely of the mind that a ninth place last year was probably an overachievement, and yeah, we might see them perhaps revert a little bit, or regress a little bit this year. But I hope that's not the case, if only for Jeff's sake and all the Ryukyu supporters out there. So yeah, James, before we say anything else negative, should we take a break? We'll have a quick pause for refreshments. When we come back, there are three more teams that we need to talk about, and I believe we're going to talk about Mito, Fagiano, Okayama, and Tokyo Verde. So yeah, stay tuned. We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back, everyone. James and I have had some refreshments, and we're ready to crack on with our J2 season preview. James, three teams left for us to talk about, and they are Mito, Okayama, and Tokyo Verde. So the teams that finished, I think, 10th, 11th, and 12th in the table in 2021. Let's talk about Mito first, James. Another kind of a printer busting off season for them. I make it 19 players out and 19 players in with the details we have here. Quite a few eye-catching moves, I think. If I just mention a couple of them in terms of players coming in, from impressive J3 debutants Miyazaki, Ryosuke Maeda, the midfielder, and Kaito Umeda, standout striker, have joined Mito's ranks. They've also brought in Kazuma Takai from Yamaguchi in midfield, Shoma Otoizumi from Toyama, another intriguing J3 pickup. They also have Naoki Tsubaki joining on loan from Yokohama Marinos. Shoji Toyama on loan from Gamba Osaka's come in. And there's a player who I don't know how much listeners will know about, or you'll know about, James, but Kosuke Kinoshita, who's come in from Urawa Reds. I have a few things to say about him later. In terms of players going out, on an Urawa Reds tip, they've lost goalkeeper Ayumi Niekawa. He's moved to Saitama Stadium. I think Kai Matsuzaki, favourite player of mine in midfield, he's also gone to join Ricardo Rodriguez at Urawa. And Ryotaro Ito, midfielder who impressed quite a few times last season here, his loan from Urawa has finished, and he's gone back. Another exciting player leaving is Koya Okuda. He's gone to Nagasaki. And in terms of strikers, Shota Fujio, his loan from Seretz Osaka has finished, and he's left. And a stalwart of Mito's front line for many years, Masato Nakayama, he's finally left and gone to Sendai. We should also mention, of course, barrel-chested Towa Yamane. I think he's gone to Gunma, is it? His loan from Seretz Osaka has finished. He's moved on to Gunma. Pretty breathless 2 minutes for me there, James, trying to bring you up to speed with Mito's ins and outs. What are you thinking about them for 2022? Is another 10th place finish looking likely under Tadahiro Akiba, or perhaps a slight regression? I don't know.
I think it's been another typical Mito winter, really. They lose a whole load of talented players, but replace them with another load of talented players. That's something that Akiba has shown that he's pretty good at doing over the last couple of years, is essentially building a new squad every year, because that's what he said to the 19 players leaving. That's the squad. 19 coming in. There's hardly anyone staying from year to year. So I think we'll probably see more of the same, because the players that you mentioned coming in, there's some really exciting players there. The two players that came from Miyazaki, Maeda and Umeda, they scored a lot of goals last year. And Kazuma Takai was someone we mentioned when we talked about Yamaguchi as being impressive for them. Shoji Toyama, he was really good for Gamba under 23s a couple of years ago. Perhaps didn't get much of a chance at Ehime last year, but it was a difficult situation. And I think, yeah, losing the likes of Nakayama, of course, he was a massive player for them, and a friend of the pod, Toi Yamane, a barrel-chested friend. He is someone who was mostly used off the bench, wasn't he? So I think perhaps not a massive loss, but he is a good player and he did contribute. So I think they're going to be really entertaining again. I don't think they'll improve much on 10th, but I don't think that's really what Mito are about. I don't think the club is kind of pushing for J1. I think they're, at the moment anyway, they're about developing players. And Akiba has shown that he is a manager who can develop players. And I think actually, or just on him, I know you and Stu, I think, have talked about how you were surprised that he's staying for a third year. I think I am as well. I mean, I don't know how long his original contract length was. It might be that he signed for 3 years. But I am surprised that he wasn't kind of lured away by a bigger club or someone sort of slightly higher up the leagues. So I think it's quite a coup for Mito to have kept him for a third year. But I don't suppose he'll be there for a fourth year. I think there'll be a lot of clubs who are very interested in him, with good reason, because he's shown year after year that he can develop. He can take a new squad and turn it into a good squad, playing really fun attacking football and developing young players. And as you mentioned, so many of them have gone on to the likes of Urawa, who are going to be challenging for, you know, Champions League this year. That shows that he's developing these players into really good players who can move to big clubs.
Yeah, and I think it's a point that's been made about Tadahiro Akiba before, and you made it very well there, that he is more of a kind of systems-based manager. So it often kind of, in the nicest possible way, it doesn't seem to matter exactly which players are available. The same kind of football and the same kind of sort of freewheeling attacking is produced. I mean, if you remember, you know, we talked about the fact that every winter the squad is basically gutted and reset. But even recently in the summer transfer windows as well, they've lost a lot of players. And then it somehow doesn't seem to impact too much on them results wise, albeit with a blip, you know, here and there, as you will have from a 10th placed or mid table team. I think what he's done as well is just transform them from being, in my mind, they were always one of the teams I'd expect to be in that kind of bottom third and maybe in relegation trouble. But since he's been there, that's just not been the case at all. You know, they've been upwardly mobile in mid-table and handed out quite a few beatings to teams in the process. So, good for Mito to have him around for one more year. I know that in Japan, traditionally, 3 years at the same company is often seen as being like a big deal, isn't it? Like 3 years is kind of the magic number. Before you can sort of safely move on. So perhaps we're seeing that kind of same sort of cultural norm being observed here. But yes, I think one more good season for him at Mito, and it will be almost impossible for them to hold on to him, I think. I tend to agree, James. Like more of the same in terms of definitely playing style can be expected. That might yield, you know, six more points than last year or six fewer. I think it's probably more of the same in general. I wanted to talk a little bit about Kosuke Kinoshita, the striker who they brought in from Ura. I don't know if you know much about him, James, but yeah, he I thought it was a lot more recent than this, but apparently back in 2013, when I was quite a regular at Yokohama FC matches, there were rumours about this incredibly good striker in the youth team there in the under-18 squad, and it was Kosuke Kinoshita. And he actually got scouted by Manchester City and trained with them at that time, and he was also scouted by Freiburg in the Bundesliga. And when it was time for him to sign his first professional contract with Yokohama FC, he actually turned down, I believe, a deal at Manchester City and went to Freiburg's reserve team, Freiburg 2, in Germany, and played there. And then I believe he also holds the distinction of he's the first Japanese player to ever play in Sweden's Allsvenskan, the top tier in Sweden. Pronunciation might be way off there, but you get the idea. But he's 27 now. Which is a bit of a shock to me. And he, I think, I wouldn't say his career is in the Last Chance Saloon or anything like that, but I think it's fair to say that from the promise that he had at age 19 and being sort of like prized away from Yokohama FC before he'd even, I mean, he's never played in the J League. He was taken to Europe before he'd even, you know, made an appearance for Yokohama FC in the J League. So he's going to be kind of, I think he's played twice for Urawa since, actually. So he has played in the J League, but, you know, hardly at all. Yeah, I do get the feeling maybe if I were in his shoes, I might feel like I had a point to prove. So I don't think his career has really hit the heights that it perhaps seemed it might do. So I'm very interested to see him and how he gets on, because I know there's a very, very elegant and good striker in there. But suddenly, he's 27. And that 8 years, I think he was quite good at Halmstad, I think, is the team he played for in Sweden. He has quite a good goals record there. But other than that, he's not really, set the world alight. So I'm very curious to see how he does. And I think he's probably in the perfect environment at Mito with Akira's style of football. So one to potentially watch, in my view. But we'll wait and see. I've been wrong many times before. So let's move on quickly, James, from me being wrong, to Okayama. Yeah, Fajiano Okayama. Now, they have been talking a good game since the end of last season and during the winter. Again, quite a high turnover of players in terms of ins and outs. And they do seem to be kind of on the verge of building a squad that can improve a lot on last season and maybe get them as a kind of into a sort of position as maybe an outside playoffs contender. I noticed that they've kept Togo Umeda, the incredibly impressive younger goalie. His loan from Shimizu in J1's being extended for another year. In terms of central defence, they look pretty stacked, don't they? Jordi Bice has come in from Kyoto Sanga, quite a surprising move after helping them to get promotion to J1. And Yasutaka Yanagi is probably going to be his partner at centre-back, you know, a player who was incredibly impressive at Tochigi last year. I notice also Kiwara Miyazaki has come in from FC Tokyo. That's a permanent deal, I think, after being on loan and being impressive. Plenty of other players coming in as well who are not as well known, so I'll skip over them. In terms of players going out, they've lost a centre-back in the form of Rikito Inoue, who's gone to Kyoto, so that almost feels like a bit of a swap with Jordi Bice. Hideki Ishige, I think they will miss. His loan from Shimizu is finished and he's gone back. They've also allowed a veteran Brazilian anchorman Paulinho to go to Matsumoto in J3. Eiji Shirai, another veteran, has gone to Tokushima. And the big one that we can't really avoid, the elephant in the room, Satoki Uejo, who was carrying the team single-handedly at times last year, he's moved on to J1 and gets his chance in the big time with Seretso Osaka. And a cracking player, but, you know, career sort of derailed by injuries in the last year or two. Lee Yong-jae, a Korean striker, he's gone back to career with Incheon. I suppose the fact that they've kept Mitch Duke around is something we should mention as well, because he was pivotal for them when he came into the team in the second half of the season last year. James, Okayama, are we seeing a kind of potential playoff outsider here, or is that too optimistic?
It's hard to tell. Because looking at last year, their defence was excellent. They only conceded 36 goals. And it looks like they're going to continue that, having kept Umeda in goal. Excuse me. And also, they've got Boyce and Yanagi in defence, and they're both very solid central defenders. The problem was goals. They didn't score enough goals. They only scored 40, which is not very many. And I think, yeah, they kept Mitch Duke, which is good because he's a good international standard striker. Losing Lee Yong-jae perhaps is not such a blow because he has not really been available much the last couple of years due to injuries, although he's a good player. They've brought in Thiago Alves from Gamba Osaka, which is an interesting move. And Kiwara Miyazaki as well, he was an exciting player when we had him on loan at Kanazawa. I think that was 2017. And then I think he had some injury problems. But yeah, hopefully now he's got a permanent deal at Okayama, so he can kind of restart his career in a way, I suppose. And I think, yeah, they need to cover the goals they're losing with Uejo leaving, because that's another really good signing by Cerezo, but he's definitely earned that move, and I'm a little bit sad that we're not going to get another year of him in J2, because he was really great to watch last year, scored some excellent goals, but without him, now they need others to step up and score the goals, and I don't know. I mean, they need someone to replace those goals. Plus, they need extra goals, really, if they're looking to push for the playoffs. So I'm not sure if they'll be able to. But having said that, I mean, Boyce and Yanagi also can contribute attack-wise. See, Yanagi was Tochigi's top scorer, and Boyce. Scored a few for Kyoto, and his distribution to the forwards was very effective for Kyoto. So maybe that will help, but I'm not sure that they've quite got enough. But they've got a new manager as well. Takashi Kiyama's come in, hasn't he? So it depends, really, isn't it? How things go early on, I suppose.
Yeah, I forgot to mention Takashi Kiyama coming in as a new boss. I think they definitely needed a change of a manager. I think things were a little bit stale, weren't they, by the end of last year. And I think he's a good manager. I know he divides opinion. He did a good job at Jeff, which is not easy to do, as has been proven by numerous other managers in the last decade. But I don't think he didn't do very well when he was in J1 with Sendai, I think.
I think anyone would have struggled with Sendai in recent years the way that.
Yeah, perhaps that's true. So yeah, we'll reserve judgment. I tend to agree. I think they've strengthened the defence considerably, but that was probably the strongest part of the team last year anyway. Yeah. But yeah, I'm not sure if there will be enough goals in the team. That obviously Mitch Duke, they're going to lose him now and again for international. Games, which I know there are fewer of those international windows than usual with the World Cup coming up in November, but there's still a chance, you know, of him being unavailable for a game or three here and there. Yeah, so we will have to wait and see on them. I think there's probably the nucleus of a kind of playoff team there, but I think this year is going to come a bit too early. And I think we might be having a similar conversation potentially about Okayama this time next year, about them perhaps having strengthened and added to the squad a little bit more. I think on Satoki Uejo, yeah, we're losing one of the standout players from last season, sadly. And we're also losing like an absolutely incredible sort of centre parting with the curtains that he had, which, as a follically challenged gentleman myself, was very sad to see that Barnett disappear. From the DAZN highlights reel for J2, but I digress. James, we should crack on. one more team for us to talk about, James, before we wrap up. It's Tokyo Verdy, and compared to the other teams we've talked about in this part, their kind of transfer business is very subdued, I think we could say. Takafumi Hori is back as manager after taking over mid-season last year, Asian Champions League winner with Urawa, of course, we shouldn't forget. In terms of players coming in and out, I don't know if there's much to get too excited about here. I think Toru Takagiwa coming in as a goalkeeper from Shimizu is an interesting move. It'll be interesting to see if he's number one, as I assume he will be. In defence, Kosei Yamakoshi from Omiya is an interesting pickup. Ryota Kajikawa, a former Verdy youth teamer, has made his loan move from Tokushima permanent, so he'll be back in the midfield. Unexciting signing, Toyofumi Sakano is coming up front from Matsumoto Yamaga. I don't know why you would let Akira Toshima leave and then bring in a very similar replacement, but there you go. One intriguing signing is the Chilean midfielder Byron Vasquez. He's joined from Iwaki, who obviously just been promoted into J3 for this year. So I'm curious to see what kind of player he is. All I know is he's a Chilean and he's coming from Iwaki. So anything else is going to be new information for me. In terms of players going out, I don't think there are too many panic-inducing headlines here either. Masashi Wakasa, who was a regular centre-back last year, but I thought had a pretty poor season overall, he's gone to Sendai. Yuan Matsuhashi, who did really well on loan at Sagamihara last year, his loan at Sagamihara is extended, which I find a bit surprising. I thought he'd perhaps done enough to come back and play a part in the first team at Verdy this year. And someone who's been a fixture in the midfield for a couple of years, or three or four, Yuhei Sato, he's made an interesting move. He's gone to Jeonnam Dragons in Korea for next year, which is going to be interesting to see how he does there. In terms of strikers, they've lost Gyalton Paraiba, who didn't really make much of an impression last year. He's been released. Akira Toshima, as mentioned, his loan from Matsumoto's finished and he's gone back. Presumably there's a shortage of pillowcases stuffed with bricks there to put up front, so they'll need someone. And Ryoya Yamashita, he's probably the big one, James, this sort of very exciting live wire wide attacker. He's been moved to Yokohama FC for next year, which doesn't look like particularly good business from a Verdy point of view. James, I got the feeling when we were chatting earlier, you're not overly enthused about Tokyo Verdy for next year. But rather than stitching you up, I'll let you speak for yourself. What do you think?
I'm not really. I mean, they scored a lot of goals last year, but they conceded even more. They're one of the worst, or maybe the worst defence in the league. I can't remember, but I can't see that they've improved that defence really. I mean, they signed a few university players and a couple of others, one back from loan at Fujieda and Kosei Yamakoshi from Omiya. I can't see that's maybe that will sort things out, but I doubt it. The players that are staying that played last year in defence are going to need to buck their ideas up because they were very shaky. And in terms of attack, they were very exciting going forward. They scored a lot of goals. But having lost Yuhei Sato, who set up, he assisted 8 goals last year, and Yoya Yamashita, who scored 7, those are two quite big losses. And they've still got, I mean, Junki Koike, Jin Hanato, Ryoga, Sato all had good years in terms of attacking production. But I'm not sure that all of them will be able to reproduce that kind of form and those kind of goal tallies again this year. So, I mean, they'll need at least one of them to continue or to reproduce last year's form to try and paper over the defensive frailties, because that's what they did last year. And I can't really see them pushing for the playoffs, but I think they'll be fun to watch, like Mito and maybe Okayama. I like this little mid-table group. It's quite entertaining.
Yeah, fair enough. It's going to be fun to see who finishes highest out of this trio, I think. In 2022. I think the points you make are very valid. In terms of goals, I mean, Junki Koike had a fantastic season last season and scored a lot, but I think that one of these years he's going to score fewer. You know, he's going to slow down. So Verdy will obviously be hopeful. It's not this season. Ryoga Sato was excellent, especially in the first half of the season, and I think they've done well to keep him. For this year, but I think he won't have the element of surprise on his side. He's a known quantity now, so I'm not sure how many goals are guaranteed from him either. In terms of defence, we should mention Tomohiro Taira, who was out injured for a long spell last year. Him coming back and being fit, I assume he is fit, he will be a bit like having a new signing at centre-back, I think, so they'll be pinning a lot of hopes on him to shore things up at the back. But I do sense that last season, Kōken Kato played a lot of games at centre-back. And obviously, he's more of a sort of defensive midfielder, anchorman by trade. And that is a ploy which had varying degrees of success. And I think the goals against Colum would tell you that it wasn't as successful as you know as perhaps it could have been. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think defence is going to be problematic and... based on the squad that they have now, mid-table, you know, kind of obscurity, if you want to use that word, looks like as high as they can go, I think.
Yeah. One more thing. So I was thinking as well, last year they had a lot of off-field issues from before the season started, really, didn't they? But they had their hostile takeover and then they had the power harassment stuff with the old manager. Maybe... if those issues are gone, it might have a positive effect on the players and the squad, and they might be able to you know, harness that kind of positivity and turn it into results.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think we made the point in our kind of season review show. Perhaps it was with Stu, where we were saying that they were probably, most people with a Verdi persuasion were probably glad to just get last season out of the way and get it over with. And I think that stands to reason. I also think, you know, Verdi do have this, you know, reputation. It's deserved for having such a good kind of academy system or youth system. So I think if they are bringing in, they do have a lot of university players joining this year, but I think they will probably be of a pretty high standard and they might have something that, I mean, Verdi's academy produces really, really good players. So they might offer something a little bit different from what's in Verdi's youth system already. But I think I got a little bit burned this time last year when I looked at Kumamoto's squad in J3 because they brought in quite a few university players and they turned out to be really good. They were the standout performers. So I wonder if for Verdi, I mean, it's not realistic to say, okay, all of these players are going to come in and be a part of the first team picture straight, but I expect at least one or two of these new signings from university are going to make a reasonable impression, a bit like Ryoga Sato did. You know, last year. So, I don't think it's all doom and gloom for Verdi by any means, but yes, I don't think they've really addressed it, or they don't seem to have addressed the kind of defensive sort of weaknesses from last year. And yeah, in terms of goals, I don't imagine, I mean, Toyofumi Sakano is quite static, and Jin Hanato is kind of in that role already, so I'm not really sure. Very hard to sit here and say that they've improved the forward line, which I don't think they have because they've lost the Ryoya Yamashita, as we said. So I think more of the same beckons, unless some of these new university players are like kind of, you know, dynamite, and we just don't know. We just don't know about them yet. So yeah, fair enough, James. I think that's all good. All good analysis. Anything else you want to mention in general before we retire and prepare for the big kickoff?
No, not really. Just quite excited to have football back, even though it's only been a few weeks since the last season finished. I think it'll be interesting this year because, again, we're going to have a lot of these midweek matches. Cause they've, you know, they've got to bunch the schedule up to finish early for the World Cup. And I think we've talked about it before, but perhaps not on an actual pod, but... it's going to be a little bit like the 2020 season where we might see a lot of, you know, injuries or burnout, and the quality might sort of tail off towards the end of the season. But that might, I think, lead to some quite entertaining football. And I think, well, yeah, I think it's just going to be fun. And I'm looking forward to talking about it a lot this year.
Fantastic. That's what we like to hear, James. Yeah, same here. And I think for me, it's the addition, or I should say the return of the playoffs, which is really what I'm looking forward to. Because as I discussed with Stu on the review pods, like the kind of the top two was decided very early last season, and I think it meant that the top half of the table was kind of not as exciting as it should have been. Obviously, the battle at the bottom was immense with those four relegation places, and that kind of made up for it. But I think this year, yes, on the one hand, there are more midweek rounds than usual because the season's slightly compressed due to the World Cup in well, the end of the year in November. But I do think, yeah, in terms of having the playoffs back, it's going to feel like a more normal season in terms of the top half of the table, perhaps. So that's good, because I think having a 22-team division and then just promotion for the top two and nothing for kind of third down to 12th to really go for, you know, it's just from a kind of dramatic tension point of view, it's been problematic the last couple of years. So let's get together again soon, James, and I think next time we speak we'll probably be reviewing some of the actual 2022 action. So looking forward to that. Okay, everyone. I think that's all for our big J2 season preview. This is the end of part three. I think thanks for sticking with us and listening to what we had to say, and thanks as always for listening and downloading to the J-Talk podcast and JTET. And if you support us by giving money on Patreon, we of course really appreciate that too. And we're very proud that people are prepared to part with some of their readies to keep the lights on for the big pod and this little pod that we've got going on. So thanks for that, and hope you're all excited about the big kickoff. And please don't come after us if some of our predictions are way off. As 22 teams, it's bound to happen. So but that's all from us for now, and enjoy the big kickoff in a week or so's time, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.